If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.
Welcome to today's masterclass on how to manage stress. Really excited to get into this today. Joined by my friend and colleague, Andrew Whiteland. So, Andrew, how are you doing? How are your stress levels today?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, John. They're at a very acceptable and helpful level. So thanks for asking. Yeah, hope you're good too. Good to be with you again on this live session. I know in the Habit Mechanic book, the chapter about stress management skills and working towards helpful thinking includes a fascinating sporting story about one of Britain's greatest Olympians. And I'd like to start by asking you to retell that and giving us the background to that. It's specifically, well, I think she's now called Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill, but she wasn't well known at one point in her career, was she?
Yeah, so Jessica Ennis-Hill first came onto my radar when I was doing my PhD at Carnegie, which is one of the leading sports science faculties, certainly in Europe, arguably the world. And she actually trained javelin there. So we have lots of high profile athletes at Carnegie because that's the kind of place that it is. But she was training javelin with a guy called Mick Hill, who was a former British Olympian himself. And so I knew she was in my environment. And then I was doing my PhD, which partly at the heart of my PhD is stress, and then I suppose the challenges that stress causes us. And I just stumbled across an article one day that she'd written about her current experiences, and she'd was going through this very challenging injury. And she'd fractured three small bones in her, I've got the note here actually, do I say left or right, in her right foot, which was a takeoff foot for high jump. So she's a, Jessica Ennis-Hill is a heptathlete, we should probably say that, or she was. So javelin is what she was training where I was teaching and doing my PhD at Carnegie, but high jump is another event in the heptathlete. Yeah, so she got this serious injury. And I just got really interested in, and so it wasn't just a one-off article. She was actually sort of writing a diary series from memory. And I just got really interested in how she was changing, in my language, changing the meaning of what was going on for her. So a core theoretical model I was using in my research was something called meaning-focused coping. From a preeminent professor called Susan Folkman, who, along with her, mentor, she created the original high-profile stress management models, how we understand those. And then she was doing this next piece of work to say, well, actually, there's a different way of looking at this. And even if you're experiencing very stressful situations, you can actually change the meaning of them, and by changing the meaning you're better able to deal with the stress. So these theoretical models that I was reading about, and at that point started to create some research projects to go into the field and investigate, I could clearly see that Jessica Ennis-Hill was using quite sophisticated ways of implementing these techniques. Her, as a young athlete, a young elite athlete, she also was the kind of person that I was using as participants in my PhD. My PhD actually included at that time the Brownlee brothers, who were famous Olympians, but also elite rugby, football and cricket athletes. So yeah, I just got really interested. And then also to couple with that, so there was this news articles that I was reading. And then because the London 2012 Games was approaching and she was someone that I suppose the British athletics thought had a chance of winning a medal in 2012, that she then featured in a big BBC documentary about the potential medal winners in 2012. And it gave this even more in-depth insight into her life and her actually what happened for her to get the injury and then this sort of rehabilitation process. And anyone who's seen my live presentations in this space, well, you will see lots of video clips around that, and they're really interesting. So that's Jessica Ennis-Hill, and of course she went on, she recovered from that injury to go on to win her first world championship medal, gold medal in 2009, and she won the gold at the 2012 London Olympics. She won another world championship. Then she actually took a bit of time out. She had a baby, and then she nearly won. She got the silver in Rio. She would have been the first person ever to come back from having a baby to win a gold medal. So yeah, very high caliber athlete, but no right genetically to win gold medal in that event, because she's quite a tiny person. But psychologically, the absolute world champion, her ability to come back, and when we might, if we zoom out from the minutiae of managing stress, we might say very resilient, very mentally tough. But the minutiae of that we know is recognizing when we're thinking and doing things that are not helpful for us, and then being able to think and do something that is more helpful for us, and then being able to habitualize that. So that's Jessica Ennis-Hill. Yeah, and I do in the Habit Mechanic book, I do dig into that story in more detail.
Yeah, it's a great example of somebody overcoming stress and moving forward to achieve their goals, as you say, John, and inspirational too because of Jessica Ennis's profile. If I could just sort of take you back to the start, as it were, of the stress process. What is stress? Why does stress happen to us? What do we experience when we experience stress?
Yeah, it's very simple. A stress happens when what we think should be happening doesn't happen. And it creates what we call a disconnection of meaning systems. So in the simplest way to explain it is you lose a little bit of control. You think this is going to happen and it doesn't happen, and you lose a little bit of control. And your brain panics. It goes into a fight-flight response. So we have an understanding of our world and what should be happening. We call that our global meaning system. And then we have actually the reality of what is actually happening. That's the situational meaning system. So an example of that is you might be on the tube, on the underground, and you expect people to respect your personal space, and someone gets a bit too close to you and it causes you a bit of a stress response. You open the door for someone and you expect them to say, thank you, that's very kind of you, but they just ignore you. You have a meeting, you expect the person to turn up on time and they don't, and it causes a stress response. You get an email from your boss and it's a little bit short and you don't expect your boss to be communicating with you like that. Your partner walks in at the end of the day and you expect them to say, hey, how are you doing? Do you have a good day? And they ignore you and they're a bit grumpy. So it can be tiny little things. It can be much bigger things. So in the Jessica Ennis-Hill example, one of the reasons it was so stressful is because she was on this journey to go into the the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing, and then literally overnight it was over. And actually she was told that she might never compete again. So 1 minute she was odds on favourite to get a medal at the Beijing Olympic Games. Literally the next day she was told, you're not going to Beijing, and actually you might never compete again. Big disconnection. But the world that we live in, it's like we need an umbrella at the moment to shelter ourselves from all these, what we call stress responses, because we live in a world where the only constant is change. The change, we talked about the VUCA world a lot before the pandemic, the volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous world, which is really saying, look, the world we live in is changing very quickly, really driven by technology. But what's happened post-COVID and during COVID is the way people have had to adopt technology. So like the tech we're using now, you know, we're doing this online. A lot of people that are tuning in are working from home today because they don't have to go to the office anymore every day. We've had this injection of generative AI recently. Just really simple things like banking has changed because everyone had to adopt these digital ways of doing things over the pandemic. People started to order their food, grocery shopping online. They started to buy everything online, not go to the high street anymore. We've even now got these dramatic weather changes. So we've got this climate crisis people are talking about. We've got economic challenges because the economies haven't recovered very well after COVID. And I think the significant majority of countries in the world are basically insolvent. So we are experiencing change at a faster rate than ever before. And every time there is a little disconnection, whether it's a news story about something, an email that comes into your Dropbox, you don't feel how you expect to feel, that's a disconnection of meaning systems. They can be big, they can be small, but they stack up. And I would say the biggest reason why people don't sleep very well at night is because there's an unmanageable of, or there's an overwhelming amount of stress that we're having to process. And then, of course, what happens when you get a disconnection is you get your brain gets flooded with chemicals, with neurotransmitters that activate what we call a fight, flight, or freeze response. Most people are familiar with that language of fight, flight response. It's our body getting ready to do something. Now, we typically think of that response as being related to physical violence threats, like a tiger comes into the room. And it's quite interesting that when we get a fight or flight response, one of the physical effects of that is if it's a big one, we start to sweat, we get sweaty palms. And the anthropologists think, and that the evolutionary psychologists think, that the reason for that effect is because early Homo sapiens would have had hairier palms. And when these sort of your dirty hairy palms became wet, they became sticky so that you could quickly avoid a predator by climbing up something. So there's a real evolutionary driver of everything that happens in our body. But the other reason we get a fight-flight response is not just for physical violence threats. It's also for disconnections in how we think we're being perceived by other people. So if we think that our social status is being reduced, we'll get a stress response as well. So we get this fight-flight response is the first part of the stress piece, which for all intents and purposes, the most important thing we need to be aware of there is we start to breathe faster. So that's why you start to feel tense, for example. And then the second part of the stress response is essentially, if you think of the lighthouse brain model that we use in the habit mechanic approach, that the spotlight from the lighthouse gets magnetized onto the worry, the problem, the threat, the stressor, basically. And it's hard to pay attention to anything else but the threat, because that's what our brain's designed to do. So we get a disconnection. We start to breathe faster because of the fight-flight response. We start to get tense. Our prefrontal cortex gets wiped out. The limbic regions take over everything. And then our brain goes on threat detection mode, and it just gets magnetized onto the problem and what might be the consequence of the problem. And that's why you hear people say, I can't think clearly. I couldn't think straight. That's because the part of our brain, our prefrontal cortex, where our willpower lives, that we used to think consciously, gets wiped out because our brain just goes into survival mode. And it happens like that, milliseconds. If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book. Because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.